Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Back here on ESPN Las Vegas, our weekly spot with Michael Felder from College Sports Now podcast on Learfield, Hand in the Dirt. He's up on Twitter at In the Bleachers. Before we get to all of the business of college football, because we will, I do want to talk about Army-Navy and why this game is special. And it's actually a good game in recent years because both programs have really stepped up.
Oh, I love Army-Navy. I almost went to the Naval Academy, actually. I was quote unquote offered by Army, Navy, and the Air Force Academy. But Air Force in West Point was out. They were out. They were already out. Too far. Navy, I have family that lives in Delaware. So I could have gotten, I could have at least seen some family at some point. And I have family that lives in Colorado Springs. My uncle retired actually 26 years from the Air Force. So don't get me started when people call him the Chair Force. I will get upset. But my uncle retired from the Air Force, 26 years, retired to Colorado Springs. So I could have been, would have felt better that at Air Force or at the Naval Academy. But at the end of the day, 2 hours from your mom, you can't top it. So I have I've been around these teams. I still get the Navy press emails and all that stuff. And so it's a game that matters. I've never been, but if you get a chance to go, from everyone I've heard, you should go.
Well, that's a good way to describe the game. A lot of class, highbrow stuff. And then there's the rest of college football, which I don't want to bag on Notre Dame.
I'm going to have to take my hat off now.
I know. I don't want to bag on Notre Dame for the bowl game stuff. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. But the snubbing. Was it a snubbing? Do they deserve to be in the college football playoff?
I'm going to say the thing that I know, and you look, you're better than I am. You know this. You're not there. What's the one thing you're not supposed to say? I don't know, right? You're not supposed to say, I don't know. I don't know if it was a snubbing. And also, actually, that's the second worst thing. The worst thing you're supposed to say is, I don't care.
Yeah.
And guess what? I don't care. I do not care. If they would have flipped them with Miami and Notre Dame, great. I understand you're making a television show. It just doesn't do anything for me. And I would rather spend more time on the actual matchups, which is what my whole week is coming forward, Thursday, Friday, getting into Monday before we get into the weekend. That's what my week is. Looking at actual matchup, player-to-player matchups, that's what I love about football. The embrace debate, that doesn't do anything for me. And so Notre Dame, I think the discussion is with Notre Dame is, so you think you're good enough already. And that's the part that really stood out to me more than they're breaking the sanctity of bowls. Oh no. They're taking their ball and going home. Oh no. You're a sports guy. I'm a sports guy, right? How many coaches have ever said, we don't need more practice?
Right.
And they're that what to me, what I hear is we don't need to practice more. And that's what I don't get on vibe with them.
Yeah.
15 extra practices for your early enrollees, for your freshmen, for your backups, extra time, and then flip it over. I've been to a bowl game before. Debauchery. Like truly, God, I wish we had a bowl game in Vegas. We would have went crazy. The team I had in 2004 at UNC, we would have been getting thrown out of places. Bugsy would have had to grab us. And to cheat these kids out of that, I was talking to Wayne Cook, talking to Roddy Jones on the College Sports. We did a mega cast. And we were talking about the bowl experience, and to not have that, I think, is really hard. And I understand they get paid from NIL, so the per diem doesn't mean as much as it meant to like a player like me. But the reality of it is you get to spend a week in a new town with your boys. In my case, I wasn't even in a new town; I was in my hometown,
right?
But I was with my boys, and we had a ball. And so I just think robbing them of that is the talking point more than taking your ball and going home and should they be in the playoff. It's, you're not like the Lowry's Beef Bowl is not the same anymore, right? At the Rose Bowl, it's not the same.
They got rid of it.
Yeah. Why?
Believe it or not, they got rid of it. Great tradition, and they just don't do it.
Yeah, because the kids don't want to get loaded up on who could eat the most because they got to play a game that goes into the playoff. But if you go to the Cheez-Its Bowl or the Pop-Tart Bowl or you go to Shreveport, are you kidding me? Do you know what your boy would do in Shreveport between the strip clubs, the crawfish and the shrimp? We in trouble. I might lose $500 and gain 20 pounds. So I just think that kids are missing out on that part when we center the playoff in that direction. And that's the thing that I think is really frustrating.
Michael Felder's with us in the bleachers up on Twitter. It's felder.substack.com is where you can get his weekly. And he writes 4 or 5 times a week on Substack. What will Notre Dame do moving forward? Will it push for a CFP to go to 14 or 16? Where they have not-so-secret clauses to get in, they're going to leave the ACC, join the ACC. What happens?
I don't think joining the ACC is an option. I don't think they're going to do that. But I do think that the Big Ten and the SEC are going to work in concert with Notre Dame to push this thing to 16 teams. I've heard multiple people that are way more connected. I'm connected, kind of. People that are more connected than me are talking about 16 teams in the upcoming year. Four automatic bids from the Big Ten, 4 from the SEC, 2 and 2 from the ACC and the Big 12. That gets you to 12 teams, right? And then the other 4 will be at large. And if a group of 5 team plays itself in, you're in. But then you can also get that 5th SEC or that 5th Big Ten or that 3rd ACC team in. And I think that's what we're looking at. And what I've realized, Cofield, is you just got to let it – like this is one of those things where you just got to – there's nothing you can do about it. Like you can't – you, me, being upset, we can't change it. There's nothing we can do. So we just have to see – like honestly, it's kind of like – have you seen Saving Private Ryan?
Of course.
Yeah. You got to figure out where the bullets are coming from so you can take cover. And I use that instead of, you know, The Longest Day or any of the, like, you know, the old classic movies, because I know you got younger listeners.
Tulane and James Madison are in. I love it. I think the little guys should have access. I fear that going to 14, 16, or 24, even with bigger numbers, are going to find ways to crush the little guy from getting in. I've never understood why there isn't a designation of the little guy. I don't understand why these are 80-year-old traditions. Times change, population bases change, schools change, money changes in terms of the money going into programs. I like that Tulane and JMU are in, and I don't know about JMU. I don't know if they can compete within the 21-point spread. I think Tulane's going to play a hell of a game against Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss has some flaws on their side. I think Lane Kiffin-less Ole Miss is a touchdown worse.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with all that. I think it's – I don't know if you've ever seen the Chappelle skit when he gets married to Oprah and somebody asks him to give some money or something and he just grabs all the money. He's like, no. That's what's happening with the Power 5, specifically the Big Ten and the SEC. They're like, all the money. We need it all. And that's just the reality. It's not a matter of being scared of losing to these teams. It's a matter of giving these teams access to money, because access to money means access to players, especially in the NIL era. Access to money means access to facilities, especially in the arms race era. So they don't want these other teams who have money. They're trying to squeeze out the ACC and the Big 12. What do you think? If they're trying to squeeze out the ACC and the Big 12, what do you think they are going to do to the MAC, the Sun Belt? Like, what do you think is going to happen there? Like, it's
the new PAC, the Mountain West.
Yeah,
it's, like, of course
they want to squeeze. They want to suffocate them. And and as they go, look, I'll say this: as you go to a 9-game schedule in the SEC, right? If the ACC goes to a 9-game schedule as well, those money games that help fuel athletic departments, where do they go? Goodbye. especially, let's say the ACC stays solvent right now. Florida State still has to play Florida. Clemson still has to play South Carolina. Louisville still has to play Kentucky. So they got to play 9 SEC games if you're Kentucky. Then you got to play a 10th game against Louisville.
Why? Can I break in? Why do you say they have to play that game? Is that almost like a state mandated thing?
Yes. You have to in that state. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then they have unfair expectations versus some of the other Power Fours who could just get rid of the tough games on their schedule, have no non-con games of real difficulty.
Of regard. Yeah. So, but imagine this. They find a way to break up the ACC. Clemson, they're in. So instead of playing 10 Power 5 games, South Carolina can play 9 because Clemson is a part of a conference schedule. Florida can play 9 because that's a part of the conference schedule. Georgia can play 9 because Georgia Tech would be a part of the conference schedule. And that's the part that when I look at this, I don't think apathy is the right word. I think trying to forecast is a better word because I don't care what they do, but what I do realize is I'm trying to see where these pieces are going to land before they land. And if Georgia Tech, Clemson, and Florida go into the SEC, the ACC is going to also lose UNC, Duke, Virginia, and they'll move up to the Big Ten. And then the ACC is like, we moved our office to Charlotte for what? For what? For right. what? So it's just what they're trying to do is consolidate power. And everyone thinks it's about making money. But the reality of it is it's about stopping other people from making money.
Right. I'm going to do what other people do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go hot take here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like James Madison being in and Tulane being in, then you hate America. Because America is about access. America is about a dream, upward mobility. And when I hear a guy like Bud Elliott, who's kind of new to the scene on college football, say in trolling fashion that James Madison being in the CFP is literally a safety issue, cut it out. Because you're coming up with hot takes that make no sense. And you hate America. And I'll build on that by saying, then the SEC better damn well stop playing that second to last week of the season against the Citadel and the Southwest Missouri States. Cut it out with it's a safety issue. That is absurd. Now you're getting ridiculous. And then I really do believe you hate access.
So I'm going to navigate this quite carefully.
Okay.
Bud is a friend of mine. We've been friends for over a decade. Here's what I'm going to say. I don't disagree. I think that what he's trying to say, and he's saying it in a very extravagant way, if you will, right? Where he's exaggerative mm-hmm. is the word I'm looking for.
Okay.
He's exaggerating in terms of it being a safety issue. But what he's saying is this is not that same game, the game that you were talking about, right? That in a November start of the season game where the team is kind of just kicking the tires or trying to lick their wounds to get ready for the end of the season game. He's saying this is a game where these guys are going to try their best and go all out, which we are looking at two different tiers of things. I don't disagree. I agree with him on that. I think the way that he said it, as you mentioned, was the word I was looking for is egregious.
Yeah.
So there's that. But I have no problem because you brought up them playing Southwest Missouri State third week of November, what have you. They also play SEC games in September, right? And we don't see the Big Ten do that. We don't see a lot of Big Ten games early in September. So they're like Georgia starts with Clemson a lot of times. LSU started with Clemson this year. So that actually happens. And so they look for space, and the space for them is, before I have to play my rival, I want to get a break. But what he's saying is this is not a break game. This is a game where we have to come down and we can leave no doubt. And I don't know that it's a safety issue. We all work out. Everybody does power cleans, which, by the way, I don't think I'll ever do in my life. I do. Look, I'll do a safety clean with a kettlebell, but I'm not doing power cleans like with a full barbell ever again.
No.
So I think that, but the point he's making is this is, these are teams on full tilt, not going at 75%. And it's a different world. And it's going to be interesting to see what it looks like. I think James Madison, I think they've got an opportunity to make some hay because they're going to run around. And that's something I don't think enough people have talked about. They're going to run around and they're going to make it hard for you. But Oregon, tell you what, Dan Lanning, Kirby Smart, give me those pregame press conferences.
Yeah.
Let's go. Here's a wall. Do you want to run through it? Yeah, I do.
They're the best. Here's a wall for Christmas. Does Michael Felder want to run through it? Of course he does. Dinner's coming up. Mm-hmm. I saw that you went shopping. You've decided on the main dish.
Yep.
I saw the boneless beef lip on ribeye.
Yep.
What is that in itsfelder.substack.com? You said 10 pounds. We're going to split it between a dinner party that we're hosting and Christmas dinner.
Yes.
Okay, what's going on here? What's the ribeye?
So we got a fat lip on it. Little cap. So we're good on that. We have a dinner party. My wife wanted to have some of her friends over because, oddly enough, a lot of our friends are staying in town for Christmas. Some of them are having, like, family over, like, grandma, grandpas, aunts, uncles, you know, like, sisters, brothers, what have you. So they're going to do that. But we're going to do, like, we wanted to do, like, a friend. Like, you know how people do Friendsgiving? We wanted to do something with the kid, with us and with the kids. And nobody, we don't want to have to worry about everybody getting a babysitter because that's, it's a nightmare. So we're going to do kids with pizzas, movie night downstairs. I'm going to do, I'll take part of that ribeye, turn it into sliders, make sliders like hand food, because everyone's going to have to run up and down the stairs. Cause everyone's kid is going to be like, "And mommy, what happened?" And you're going to be like, "This is ridiculous." So I want to do that and do that with some dipping sauces and then have like just like French fries and the whole deal. And like instead of like a sit down true dinner party, like adults playing like board games and hanging out and watching TV and just relaxing, knowing that like your kids are safe downstairs. I'll do popcorn for the kids as well. Popcorn's for the adult. And we'll do that, hang out, have a couple bottles of wine, have some whiskey and just chill. And then for Christmas dinner, we're doing the ribeye. I'm going to fry it, actually. What? It should be. Yeah, yeah. Look it up, dude. It's a thing.
How do you fry it? Are you talking in fryer outside?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Outside.
Okay.
Big, like, I mean, it's going to be like 6 pounds. It's going to go in there, drop it in, get it up to temp, let it rest. We should have medium rare, good to go. And then we're going to do a horseradish mashed potato. I'm not doing gravy. I'm just going to do a jus for the steak. We're going to do shaved almond green beans. And my wife would kill me if I didn't do mac and cheese.
Right.
And then I'm going to make a cheesecake.
Hello.
Strawberry swirl.
We've gone over the green bean casserole versus the almond green beans.
No. My wife's from the Midwest. She likes green bean. She likes it. I'm
not making them. Out. Yeah, it's not in my house.
No. If I'm at your mom's house, I'll make it. But we live in Charlotte, North Carolina. First of all, we should be having collard greens anyways. But I will make the shaved almond green beans with balsamic.
I'm in. All right, Felder. I'll talk to you, buddy.
All right, see you, bud.
Michael Felder right here on Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Did you know, Jeff Parles, that the wildly popular green bean casserole, not in the Felder household because he does the holidays like no one else, I believe was actually invented by Campbell's to be able to sell their soup because obviously it's mixed in the green bean casserole. And I wonder if that's going to take a hit with the Campbell's executive a couple of weeks ago basically laying out that their soup is crap and filled with just fake stuff and it's for us, the poor people.
You know?
Or is green bean casserole such Americana now on the holidays that it'll never go away.
You know, I'll say this.
I do like those crunchy onions.
Those are delicious.
Crispy.
I never had green bean casserole at a holiday meal until I was in the Midwest.
I never, you know what? I mean, we're both from New Jersey. I never had it at home.
Never.
I would almost guarantee my mother would sound like Michael Felder. She's a woman, so not exactly like it, but I would guarantee she'd be like, I never made that.
No.
Garbage. But that said, I like it.
You know, I've had one version of it that was really good. I've had plenty of versions of it that
really
I thought
bad.
It was just mashed up nothingness and flavorless. But there's one version of it that I had was really good, and it's not on the menu for the holidays for my wife and I now, so probably we'll never have that version again, in all honesty.
You had a bang-up Thanksgiving, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty good. You couldn't even get the turkey from Costco that day. It was sold out.
It was a little theater of the mind.
Okay.
I found a secret stash.
Oh, you did?
Because you had told me they had these kind of, you know, here's all of it, right? Complete meal for like $40. I got one for like $42.
Yeah.
I watched some tutorials on it, and I learned some lessons. Like, you do have to do a little extra cooking.
Sure.
So, I'll give the turkey a B+. I'll give the mashed potatoes a D. The stuffing was a B. The green beans, you know, you got to do something with it. You can't just throw it in the oven. You actually have to cook them. And I think you had to do that for the mashed potatoes, but I was lazy. But overall, the alternative, and I didn't get to go, the alternative was going to a restaurant on Thanksgiving, and that was going to be $45 to $55 for one plate.
Yep.
So I got a week plus, because anyone who listens to the show knows that I'm an animal. So I will push leftovers for like to 9 days out. And I was having turkey. I took turkey on the road.
Oh, boy.
I had a turkey sandwich, I think, in Boise.
Oh, man. No,
That was like 8 days later.
I thought
the turkey was good at the big box store. So
what do we get? Five? We got five meals out of it, I think, at our
house?
It was
a lot of food.
I think we got five meals.
It was just you two or four people?
It was just two of us.
It was a lot of food.
Yeah, we got 3 days worth of meals, five total meals.
Okay.
I agree with you on the green beans. I think you're a little harsh on the mashed potatoes, even though they needed a little bit of something extra.
I didn't doctor them, and I did a little bit, but I was, like I said, I was lazy. I think they had potential, but
and the turkey was significantly better than I thought it was going to be.
It was actually very good. Yeah. This was the other thing. I had food brought home to me too,
mm-hmm.
So I had so much Thanksgiving food. Like, I love it, but I just couldn't eat all of it, so I ran out of time, basically.
Look at it.
And my timeline's longer than anyone on the face.
Oh, if you ran out of time, that's pretty impressive.
You know, I was like, okay, I think this is probably on the edge of being bad, like real bad. Not bad, the Golden Circle Sports Bar. Great menu here. I'm a big fan of the Golden Ham and Swiss. They got the Black Forest BLT, the Clubhouse Sandwich. Love the Loco Mocos, the original, and the Cajun Moco. We'll be here tomorrow with Throw the Flag on ESPN Las Vegas from 9 until 11. We are going to talk to Chuck Esposito from the STN book. He could not be on today, so he'll give us the skinny on the NFL weekend and a little bit on Army-Navy and the L.A. Bowl. We'll preview the L.A. Bowl with former Mountain West Conference. We can say former, right? They're out. They're done. They're out. Former Mountain West Conference foe, Boise State. So big show on the way, and they have breakfast here. They have breakfast here every day. It actually starts at midnight until 9 a.m., and then on the weekends, it goes all the way until 12:30. Here is the Golden Circle Sports Bar. Coming back, we go around the NFL. We'll give our picks, our leans, our likes. Parles, Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas.
It's Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
So right now, NFL playoff picture. No Mahomes, no Burrow, no Lamar Jackson. I mean, they're in the picture. They're not in. They're just outside the picture, or way outside. No Baker Mayfield. Last night was really bad for the Bucs.
Horrible.
No Jared Goff. No Dak. No Jaden Daniels. Jaguars are a 3 seed. Panthers are leading their division. The Colts look to be on the verge of losing every game the rest of the way. And, Aaron Rodgers is just one game over .500, but that division is for the taking.
That's an improvement over last year, too, for Aaron.
Yeah. Big improvement.
Oh, boy. You know, I'll just say this, because this has been a totally bizarre NFL season by every which way you can possibly dream up, where you just mentioned all the guys that are out. The AFC playoff picture, more so than the NFC playoff picture, because there are really darn good teams in the NFC. The AFC quarterbacks are Bo Nix, Drake May, Trevor Lawrence. How old is Aaron now? 42? Aaron's 42? He's not the oldest guy in the league anymore with Philip in there.
Young guy.
A young guy now. Josh Allen. C.J. Stroud. And Justin Herbert, who's clearly not going to be healthy by the time the playoffs come around. And I know we mentioned this earlier in the show, where if this is not Buffalo's time, when is it? I'm not fully convinced this is Allen, as good as Allen is, and he is by far the best quarterback that will be in this field in the AFC. Do we trust that team at all? Especially if they have to win three road games, in which if they lose on Sunday to New England in a game that I think is a complete coin flip, the AFC East is done. They're going to have to play three road games, and I'm not sure that team is good enough to win three road games the way they're constructed, unless if Allen just goes full, go nuclear like he did in the year that they should have beat Kansas City the 13-second game.
I trust the Bills to play really entertaining games. That's about all I trust.
Okay, so the answer is no then.
I don't trust them to win. No, because they have to score a lot of points because their defense has become incredibly leaky.
And I'm at the point now, Cofield, I've been on this for a month now. If Trevor Lawrence plays clean football, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are making the Super Bowl out of the AFC.
Whoa.
And I know that is not so. But let's look at these other teams that are in there. Let's take Buffalo out for a second, because they should be looked at, even though they're not the betting favorite, they should be looked at as the favorite especially if they somehow win the AFC East. Do we trust Denver at all? I don't. They have a really good defense. I don't trust Bo Nix at all. What about New England? Do you see how easy New England's schedule is going to end up being when this is all said and done? The New England Patriots are somehow going to play a 17-game schedule where they play four games against a team that makes the playoffs. It's not even possible, and that's what they're going to end up pulling off.
I mean, we've talked about it before. It is not to that degree, but it is by design that the NFL wants upheaval. They want the middle to move up, the bottom to potentially move up, the top to have to go through a freaking gauntlet.
Sure.
And probably become more ordinary. If you look at some of the top teams from a year ago, the schedule, I mean, it's good for us, the fan, because you, like, every week you look up, you're like, wait, the Chiefs are playing this team, the Eagles are playing this team, like, this is crazy. It's kind of a phony way to prop teams up, which is also why, one, I'm not that confident the Patriots are going to win against the Bills this weekend, and to me, the Patriots are a play against in the playoffs.
I think they more so than Denver are a play against just because of the weakness of their schedule, and that's not their fault. You just play who's on there. The biggest positive factor for them is they're going to have the best head coach or the second best head coach in the AFC playoffs, depending on what you think of Harbaugh and Payton, basically. Where I think I'd have Harbaugh slightly ahead of Vrabel, slightly ahead of Payton at this point in his career, even though Sean has done a tremendous job with a quarterback that I just don't trust at all. Chargers, again, I don't trust them because their offensive line stinks. And then you have Jacksonville and you have Houston, where I think Houston's the worst coached offensive team in the AFC playoffs, but they have the best defense and the best unit in the AFC playoffs. So they're a confounding team. But it just, we're going to look back in this season probably 5 years now from now and be like, what the heck
happened
here?
You know when that happens, too, and I've had it happen a few times. When you go to the Super Bowl as a media person and, you know, you're kind of pulling together your plan, and then you're like, I don't know, like, a whole lot about this team.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be a surprise team every once in a while. It's not to say, like, you don't know them at all. But you're so used to the same group of, like, eight teams or six teams in any era competing. Trying to look back and see what year.
Well Cincy and the Rams.
That's the most recent one.
Recent one.
But especially the Cincy side.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, Denver and Carolina was, well, that was kind of wacky back in 2016.
Carolina spiked the 15-1 out of nowhere.
Yeah. I'm going back a little further than
that. I mean, you're basically.
Zona showing up in 2009, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're.
You had Panthers back in 2004 with the Jake DeLome team. Was that Jake DeLome? Yeah.
That was Jake DeLome, Mushin Muhammad, and young Steve Smith Sr.
The Patriots even had a freaking spy and cheat for that one, too.
Well, and also the Patriots, the first year that the Patriots made the Super Bowl. I mean, we're going back to that, right? Tennessee with Steve McNair, like we're going back 25, almost 30 years at this point. Once we're naming that,
I was at that one, the 2000. That was probably the most odd one with the Rams
and the Titans.
Well,
the other one, like even San Francisco and Baltimore, when we randomly got that one with Flacco, like Baltimore is in the AFC title game basically every other year with Flacco until they busted through, and the Niners were in the NFC title game the year before.
That was Flacco and Cap, though, right?
Yeah, it was Kaepernick. Yeah. Well, it was horrible.
So we probably are going to get. I mean, what's the wildest team? I mean, the Panthers are not going to make the Super
Bowl. The Panthers aren't making the Super Bowl.
So you think.
Jack, based off of what I'm saying, I think it's pretty clearly Jacksonville.
Yeah, Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence and this Liam Cohen guy in the Super Bowl, people would look around and be like, wait, where the hell was I this year?
Yeah.
Like, they kind of were under the radar.
I think them and Houston.
Houston would be amazing.
Yeah.
They were left for dead.
And Davis Mills saved their season.
Stopgap, and they won three. What, they go 3-0 without him?
Yeah, and they won the game against, but they had the epic comeback against Jacksonville, and they beat Buffalo mixed in there. And then on the NFC side, like, look, we're familiar with Stafford and the Rams. We're familiar with the Eagles, even though I don't think they're getting their act together. We're familiar with the 49ers. But, like,
wouldn't the Bears make the Bears? Wouldn't that be career? Like,
the Bears and the Seahawks.
So far out of the mind, the predictive mind before the season.
I felt like I was the only one who picked the Bears to win the NFC North going in because they had the last place schedule, and I thought they improved so much at head coach that it was going to make a difference. And you know what's kind of weird, too? Like, the Packers have been an afterthought still. And
I'm not sure why, because they have star power.
I know.
They were really good last year. Yeah. They added arguably the best defensive player in football.
Yeah.
They killed it on defense.
Doesn't it feel like the Packers are an afterthought and they're the number two seed in the NFC? And if L.A. gets upset by one of their division mates in the divisional round, the Packers should be the favorite to make the Super Bowl? Isn't that bizarre? But that's kind of just like Jordan Love just doesn't do it for a lot of people.
Who was your top wacky choice in the NFC? Like, you look up at the Super Bowl and you're like, whoa, they're here.
I think it has to be Chicago based off
I don't know.
But the second, I'm not counting Carolina. I don't think Carolina can possibly
win. You've been
win
talking
three.
About the second one. I think I know where you're going. You've been talking about the second one for weeks. That they're
what, with
that
Seattle?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it has to be, right? Because it's Sam Darnold, the quarterback. Even though.
I think a lot of people will be like, Mike who? Like, yeah. They won't even know who the coach is.
Well, it's funny because, like, we think, oh, the Legion of Boom was recent, but that was basically a decade ago at this point.
Feels like it here with Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I just, but they're the one. They would be the one. Could you imagine? I see Seattle, Jacksonville, Super Bowl, and Santa Clara. Yeah, there we go. There's Mad Libs for you.
I bet you can get a ticket to it for less than $2,000 this time around.
I actually think I picked Jacksonville in that game.
If the Jacksonville Jaguars. Well, I'm going to go back. I'm going to tell a story for the 50th time I've told it, and it'll be told a lot the rest of my radio career, however short it is. If the Jacksonville Jaguars win the Super Bowl with Trevor Lawrence, it's going to bring up such bitter memories for me, because I've mentioned it many times. I was so into the tank for Trevor year with the Jets that I, watching the games, Rams, Bengals?
Browns.
Was it Browns?
The second win was Cleveland.
Okay.
Two playoff teams.
The first win was Rams?
Yes. That was the Survivor Carnage game.
Yep. I cried. I'm not lying. I was at home, and I was like, as a Jets fan, we just blew the number one pick and a chance to get Trevor Lawrence. Now, I've been dealing with it more easily. Yes, the Jets still suck. But I've been dealing with it more easily because I'm like, well, you know what? Trevor Lawrence wasn't the second coming of Peyton Manning. If he wins a freaking Super Bowl, It's going to bring all that emotion back up again.
And it's fascinating, too, because...
God, I was upset that year.
Because he's finally gotten a coach that kind of knows what his deficits are. And I love Liam Cohen. I thought... Also, keep in mind, Jets didn't even interview Liam Cohen this year. Did the Raiders talk to Cohen, right? He was a candidate for a while, but who knows how realistic that was.
I think he snubbed him pretty hard.
Yeah, but I mean...
Which is weird, too, because of Spytek, you know, being there and yeah. Cohen and...
Yeah, well, obviously...
Cohen's also... That was a weird thing, too, with Cohen.
Well, remember, he'd signed to agree to come back to be the OC, and then in the middle of the night, he was like, no, I'm taking the job. He basically pulled a Bob Irsay at that point. But, you know, I just... It feels like this year, especially in the NFL, with how ridiculous it's been, that we are going to get one absurd team. It just makes more sense to me that it's coming from the AFC, and whoever comes out of the AFC will get smacked by the Rams. I know the Rams have had a few ridiculous losses, the one to San Francisco on the short week, the one recently to Carolina. But if they have home field, I just don't see anyone beating them in route to the Super Bowl.
I wouldn't bet them, though, on a future board.
Well, it's too short now.
I also wouldn't bet them after what we just saw with the Colts and Daniel Jones.
Well, if Stafford... Well,
yep.
Oh, Jimmy G's better than anyone that the Colts had, though.
Is he?
Yes.
You see Wolfman just came back? John Wolford just re-signed?
No, I didn't see that. Who did he say?
I think maybe Minnesota. I love when he got some playing time just because of his nickname, the Wolfman.
Wake Forest.
Let me go back to that Jets year with Trevor Lawrence, because now this is starting to get worked up. No, because I remember, I think we had him on that year. Our buddy Brandon Tierney is like a maniacal Jets fan.
Sure.
But he looks at things differently. Like, he is like really game to game, like week to week, and there's no long range vision. So he hates tanking. He hated that year, the tank for Trevor. He hated that year. Can I tell you that because the Jets are so bad, that was one of the most fun years I've had as a Jets fan, because I was rooting for something and they were coming through. They were losing, and I would come in on the air on Monday, and I'm like, I was in a good mood. I'm like, this is great. Mission accomplished. And that's why, like, I was broken when they won some games. I'm like, I can't believe they just blew this. And that's why this year is especially, I think, sucky for the Raiders.
Yeah.
They're doing without trying. They're accomplishing really what they need to do in a given year. They're losing. They're almost in control of the number one pick.
One more Tennessee win, they are.
But I had Trevor Lawrence. Now, while he hasn't turned out, he was hyped.
Sure.
What are you rooting for if you're a Raiders fan? You want the number one pick, but you're like, who's that guy? You don't even have the guy.
It's Mendoza.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and here's the other. You mentioned this earlier in the show with the mock draft that had, the ESPN mock draft that had Dante Moore going number two. That scares me also. Where I think Dante Moore is a great skill set, but I think he needs another year in college football.
College football is filled with unbelievable quarterbacks who all need to go back.
For next year.
And I mean, I'm talking about, like, if some of the freshmen could come out, I'd be more fired up about them in some cases than Mendoza.
Well, I again, if Arch Manning came out, and I would be floored if he did, if I had the first pick, I would take Arch Manning.
Right.
I wouldn't even hesitate. He ain't coming out, though.
But there's an additional reason he won't come out. Look at who could potentially be at the top of the draft.
Well, he also could make – he's going to make a lot of money.
Archie Manning and Cooper, his dad, would probably do the same thing that Archie did with Eli. He'd be like, no.
Well, and Peyton,
I'm not sending him to Las Vegas. And I'm starting to bag on the Raiders, and I feel like their structure is better, minus Jim Gray. But it just feels like the same old disorganized, cursed – and, you know, that is funny on the whole Archie Manning thing. It worked out for Eli because he got two Super Bowls.
Sure.
And the Giants were a quality organization.
At that time,
top to bottom, the Chargers were not a terrible organization. At the very top, they were. And that guy's still around, and that's the owner. That was the biggest issue at the time. And I don't know if they had a beef with A.J. Smith, because obviously...
Well, Marty was the coach at that point, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so... Much better than Norv.
And it worked out. It worked out for him. Yeah. So anyway, Yeah, I don't. I have to take a break. I'm gonna take a break. Trevor Lawrence in the Super Bowl. I don't know if I can take it. All right, a couple leans and likes on the way back, and we do have to get to a great soundbite. We were just talking about Fernando Mendoza, which, by the way, I'm going to call him Francisco all the time because his brother Francisco. I can already tell that's going to be one of my name issues. Max Crosby on his podcast, he saw Mendoza post game. He had a strong reaction to Mendoza and the way he was acting. All right, we're going to get to that somewhat breaking news. I don't know. It's a little weird for me. Kyle Whittingham, we'll get to that with the Utah head coach. He's going to be walking away. So last game will be here in Las Vegas. We'll get to that in a second. But we were just talking about the situation organizations can be in. Like I was in, you know, I really take this personally. Jets fan here, Jeff Parles. As a fan, when your organization, your team blows, and they're in the running for the number one pick, and that quarterback you think is going to be the savior is there, right? And unfortunately, maybe I'm misreading this. Maybe by the time the draft comes around, people are going to be like, Mendoza is awesome. You know, it's just he's going to get so hyped up. I don't feel like the Raiders have that sitting out there for them. Maybe he's the guy. I'm also thrown off a little bit by what I believe is going to happen to him. I think he is going to be sliced and diced a lot based on his personality, which he seems like a really nice kid. But, man, that pregame and especially the postgame after the Ohio State game, people really noticed that, including current Raider leader Max Crosby.
That quarterback, that might have been the funniest interview of all time. And I'm not going to lie, bro. I was in tears laughing. I'm a fan of him now.
Want to give all the glory to God?
Might have been the funniest.
Especially like glue.
Glue love each other.
We lost it at glue too, bro.
The glue was the greatest thing. He gave me big Jameis Winston vibes for sure.
Maybe he is what the Raiders need is kind of a cheesy, you know, dyed in the wool guy who just loves football, is coming in with a fresh attitude, no cynicism. They do need someone to turn things around. They certainly need it at that position. They need a young dude. It didn't work out a few years ago with the way they won at the end of the year and blew the opportunity to get Jaden Daniels, and then that got AP another year. Ugh.
I don't think the Raiders are winning another game. So I think they're getting the number one pick. And as of this moment, Mendoza's the only quarterback that I realistically see. Again, I'm assuming Arch Manning is not declaring. Like, I'm just assuming that to be the case. But of the other potential quarterbacks, Mendoza's the only guy that I would even consider taking in the top 10. And I think Dante Moore's skill set is really good, but I think if he comes into the NFL now, he's going to be a mess and it's going to not work out. He needs to really go back to college for one more year. But I think you're onto something, though, with maybe you just need someone who's so out of left field personality-wise, who's different from what we're accustomed to in this league, to help out a franchise. I mean, this year has devolved into such an embarrassment that anything different should help what that locker room and that franchise right now.
Is there an Eli Manning, Arch Manning possibility where an organization that the Mannings would look at and go, absolutely no freaking way? Is there a match with a good organization that would have a high pick? Because I was thinking the Rams with that pick, but last night hurt them.
Definitely.
They have the Falcons pick. I think I'm thinking, because I'm trying to come up with, hey, what would prompt the Manning family to go, you know what, that's who we want Arch to be with, and they have the ability to get up to the top of the draft.
Well, that's the interesting thing. What happens if you do get a scenario where a team that could trade up to number one, number two, whatever pick it is to get Arch would want to do that? I don't think he's leaving Texas. I think he's staying one more year, and then in 27 we get to do this, like you're saying, with a potential move up for a franchise that the Manning family wants Arch with.
Would they do it for the Saints, or are the Saints too far gone?
I actually think Tyler Shuck should be that long-term quarterback. He's looked pretty good the last month.
Well, this is all draft talk way in advance of what we're going to be doing for 3 months, because I've already seen some Cleveland radio people having freaking meltdowns over the fact that there's a whole camp now that's like, Shadur, we're good. We're all set. No quarterback needed. Shadur's the guy. That you want to talk about a freaking Pierce-Six brawl. That's going to be going on for months and months and months. I mean, a lot of it depends on what Shadur. If he puts up numbers like he did last week a few more times, oh, boy. We're back tomorrow. Throw the flag, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. A lot of football talk, college basketball as well. for Pearls. Mateo, James back on the board. We'll see you. Thank you.